Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I think there's an expectation here that, you know, we should do well. And if we can't do well here in L.A., then it doesn't bode well for the rest of the country.
Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, November 8th, 2011. I'm Tiffany Brannon. California State University faculty members are protesting school policy in contract disagreements at all 23 Cal State campuses today. The union is fighting for $20 million in faculty salary increases. Mike Uhlenkamp, Cal State's Director of Media Relations, points out that the state cuts the school's funding by $584 million this year.
In terms of the protests or any other kind of concerted activity, the concern is for students. We're going to work to ensure that students are able to get to their classes and that the operation of the campus is disrupted as little as possible.
Reporter Megan Sweese is at Cal State Los Angeles now. Megan, what's going on there?
Well, it's been a normal day mostly on campus, quiet. But over here at King Hall, Saturday, we have created a picket line. They're shouting like it's Occupy Wall Street, saying things like it we're the 99%. One sign also says we teach the 99%. Chapter President Melina Abdullah told me that this is about student learning conditions. A student here also told me that she's had to sit on the floor two times in a class because of class size.
What's the school's response been?
Well, a representative of the school told me before that the faculty are the only group to have received a raise since 2007 at the university, and clearly they've had state funding cuts as well. Abdullah responds, though, that the school could afford the raises. The administrative increases in salaries could have gone to faculty, which would ultimately get to the classroom. She says that teachers here can't afford to continue teaching at Cal State University.
Well, thanks, Megan. And the faculty union has planned a strike on two additional campuses on November 17th. Voters in LA's 15th Council District are going to the polls today to replace Janice Hahn. 11 people are running in the special election, which has cost nearly $2 million. The top two vote winners are likely to face a runoff election in January. The 15th District spans from Watts to San Pedro. Other elections in Southland today include a city council race in Hawthorne, proposed reforms in Vernon, and a few municipal measures. Polls close tonight at 8 p.m. Los Angeles Mayor Antonia Villaraigosa is calling for an end to businesses' taxes on car dealerships. The mayor says nearly 100 dealerships have left Los Angeles in the past 25 years because of business tax. Villaraigosa believes that getting rid of the tax will allow the city to tap into nearly $30 million in sales tax revenue.
But there are smart reforms that we can make now. For too long, LA's business tax has driven auto dealers outside of the city limits.
City Council President Eric Garcetti and Councilman Mitch Englander are expected to present the plan to the City Council. The White House just okayed California's plan to cut funding for Medi-Cal, which allows poor and disabled Californians to see doctors regularly. But the clinics that serve those people think this budget move needs more than a Band-Aid. Rosalie Murphy has more.
The waiting room at the Eisner Pediatric and Family Medical Center is buzzing today. About three dozen people, half of them children, sit on benches waiting for nurses to call them into clean, white hallways with green door trim. A sign above each reception desk declares that no one will be denied immunizations because of inability to pay. But about a third of Eisner's funding comes from Medi-Cal, California's division of federal Medicaid. Because of both state and federal cuts, they may need to start looking for money somewhere else. Luis McCarthy is the CEO and president of the Community Clinic Association of Los Angeles County. It comprises 47 centers like Eisner.
And these clinics are ground zero when it comes to the health of the communities that they serve. And that makes it absolutely unacceptable to consider these types of cuts at a time when we're trying to get our economy back on track and our communities thriving.
Federal stimulus money ran out in California this summer, and the Affordable Care Act won't take effect until 2014. And the Congressional Supercommittee, reevaluating the federal deficit, may cut Medicare money from that bill. Congresswoman Judy Chu represents California's 32nd District. She's worried that the Supercommittee's cuts to Medicare will be too ambitious, at the expense of Los Angelinos who frequent clinics like Eisner.
I don't like what I'm hearing about having $3 trillion worth of cuts, which is twice as much as what they are mandated to do. That concerns me greatly, and so that's why I think it's important for everybody to raise their voices right now.
The California Medical Association has already filed a lawsuit against California's budget action, and the Supercommittee should announce their cuts in the next 2 weeks. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
Occupy LA has been camping and marching at banks so long, it seems like a part of the landscape. But does anyone know where it all started? From the tweets to the streets, Kyle Tabuenafroli follows the social media trail that led them to today.
I came home, was upset that there was nothing going on in Los Angeles, so was following Twitter live, seeing the sort of Twitter bomb that was going on, everyone trying to tweet Occupy Wall Street, OWS, and saw someone else who was in Los Angeles who was also frustrated that everyone was out.
The after effects of the 2010 oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico are more potent than ever before. That's what the claim in a new documentary opening Friday in Santa Monica. The filmmakers of The Big Fix shared their findings today as Ellen Castor reports.
Happening here, and she had posted.
Rebecca Harold Tickle, co-director and producer of the documentary, spent 18 months filming in the Gulf of Mexico. She was told by local officials that the air and water was not dangerous. In fact, they wouldn't allow her to wear respirators because they were nervous it would make it seem like there was something to fear. Shortly after she and her husband began filming, Tickle noticed the skin on her feet was peeling off. She developed blisters on her neck and chest and spent a year suffering from 13 respiratory infections.
It upsets me greatly to think that there are thousands of other people who have been affected in the same way that I have.
Doctors diagnosed Tickle with an irreversible condition that was a result of overexposure to oil and Corexit, a dispersant used by BP to break up the oil spill. She is not alone. The after effects of the oil spill are affecting hundreds of thousands of people. Stuart Smith is a New Orleans attorney specializing in toxins. He says the most frightening thing is that the oil is still leaking. He knows because he took samples of fresh oil off the coast of Mississippi this August. When the spill happened, it would have been possible for BP to clean it up, according to Tim Robbins, the executive producer of the documentary. Instead, BP sprayed it with the dispersant Corexit, an act that Robbins says was purely cosmetic. Instead of extracting the oil from the Gulf, it just sent it sinking below the surface.
It was an effort by BP to get the oil off the surface of the water and down below where it could not be photographed and reported on.
A problem, the film explains, has caused greater long-term issues for the ocean's ecosystem.
Where does that oil go? It goes down to the bottom. Where does life in a body of water start? At the bottom. So in effect, what has happened is the oil has gone out of public view, but it is now killing an ecosystem.
Scientists estimate that over 40% of the Gulf floor is covered in oil. Robbins says the reason BP neglected to clean it up is because it would have cost them billions of dollars in fines and would have shown the public how big the spill actually was. This has had a tremendous impact on marine life, killing thousands of dolphins, turtles, and fish. The documentary suggests the reason the government hasn't done anything about it is most likely because BP is the government's largest supplier of oil. When drilling reopened after the spill, BP was the first to get a license from the government.
Why is BP determining policy?
The Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said today the Obama administration will begin opening up areas in Alaska for drilling. Representatives from BP neglected to share their side of the story in the documentary. Filmmakers hope the story they tell will trigger public response and hold government leaders responsible. Ellen Castor, Annenberg Radio News.
A spokesman for BP told Annenberg Radio he hadn't seen the film and couldn't comment on it. Sorry for the earlier technical difficulties. Tonight, we'll have cool and clear weather with a low of 46. Tomorrow, sunny skies and temperatures in the low 70s. And on Thursday, the clouds will roll back in with a high of 73. Later on Annenberg Radio News, how much progress has Los Angeles really made in race relations? Talk radio is known for pushing people's buttons, and sometimes it veers into hate speech. Today, the UCLA Chicano Studies Research Center released a study that quantifies hate speech on the airwaves. Ariel Edwards-Levy reports.
A study by the UCLA Chicano Research Center measured the amount of hate speech used on Los Angeles commercial talk radio. It found that hateful rhetoric has been commonplace on the radio airwaves since the mid-1990s. The study researched 114 claims of racial intolerance and found 63% of them were substantiated. Sean Noriega is the director of the UCLA Chicano Research Center. He spoke on the study's findings.
But I want to just lay out what seemed to be a pattern that we feel merits further study. And that is a distinct and recurring rhetorical pattern for targeting specific vulnerable groups that relies on the systematic use of a combination of unsubstantiated claims, divisive language, and indexical terms that point to a nativist attitude.
The study examined The Lou Dobbs Show, Mr. Independent, Savage Nation, and The John and Ken Show. Kelly Madison is a professor of television, film, and media studies at Cal State LA. She says the use of this kind of speech poisons the airwaves.
I'm very concerned about the role some media outlets might be playing in terms of promoting hate speech or rhetoric that aggressively dehumanizes people who are constructed as the enemy, and therefore fosters a climate of hate and prejudice that can lead to discrimination and violence.
Madison says the study shows an unfortunately common trend in talk radio. Ariel Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
Erin Aubrey Kaplan has been writing about race in Los Angeles for many years. The former LA Times and LA Weekly columnist has a new book out called Black Talk, Blue Thoughts, and Walking the Color Line. I spoke with her today about the current state of Black LA and how she hopes her new book will help people come to a better understanding of color in America.
The book is actually a collection of my journalism over the last 15 years. And in fact, I was just out there being a reporter, writing stories, and then I looked back after many years and realized that I really had kind of a narrative that was common to all of my stories, and that was really about kind of the state of Black LA, the state of Black people in the country, and then actually, on a much smaller scale, my own state of mind and how I fit into kind of, you know, the modern Black reality. So the pieces all range from just straight-ahead stories about development in L.A. and public education to who am I, what am I, and where is the state of racial relations today. So it really goes all over the map, but in fact, all these pieces connect to make, I think, kind of a related narrative.
What kind of racial struggles still exist in Los Angeles that people just really aren't aware of?
Oh, gee, you know, I started reporting in 1992, which, as you know, was the year of the civil unrest in L.A., and I have to say that was almost 20 years ago, and the state of things are pretty much what they were 20 years ago, and that's not very encouraging. And so all I can say is that this is a hard story to tell. It's a story of stagnation, a lack of change, which frustrated me terribly as a reporter. I always thought I was on this wonderful mission to bring light to the world and to encourage change, and this has been happening since the end of the civil rights movement. What kind of movement is there? What can we expect? You know, it's a hard story to write because you're writing about a lack of action versus action. So that's kind of what the book is about. It doesn't sound like an exciting topic, but it's very rich in terms of themes and history and even, you know, personal stake. I think it's interesting because L.A. is really, in my mind, the last big American city where people really can make their visions come true. That sounds kind of hokey in Hollywood, but I think there's an expectation here that, you know, we should do well. And if we can't do well here in L.A., then it doesn't bode well for the rest of the country.
What do you see changing in the future regarding these racial issues, you know, specifically in Los Angeles?
I don't know what I expect to see. What I hope to see is what I've hoped for the last, at least last 20 years, and that is a real focus on addressing of inequality. This is old. This is not a new sentiment. It's not a new issue. I think now, though, in 2011, we're having a moment of focus on inequality, which I think is very good, and I think I have not seen this since 1992, frankly. I think 1992 is the last time we had a national conversation about inequality, and that was around, you know, racial inequality because of the unrest. But now it's more broader than that, but it's still, at this moment, about inequality, and I really hope we can take that apart and see how black inequality is so foundational in terms of the inequality in this country.
If there's one thing that you hope people are left with after reading your book and hearing what you have to say, what would that be?
I hope that in reading this book and seeing how I connect to that big wall out there of race and issues, I hope that people come away with a better understanding of color in America.
Erin Aubrey Kaplan is the author of the new book, Black Talk, Blue Thoughts, and Walking the Color Line. Residents in the Valley and the Santa Monica Mountains are sick of the daily, noisy swarm of paparazzi, police, and news helicopters. Today, the LA Board of Supervisors offered hope of relief. To reduce the noise and invasion of privacy, the board voted to support a state bill that would offer the FAA to restrict flight paths and set minimum altitudes. The Los Angeles-based Professional Helicopters Pilots Association warned that airspace and altitude restrictions could create air traffic congestion and conflicts between helicopters and aircraft. California's nonpartisan analyst office gave a mixed report today on a proposed pension reform. The plan was introduced last month by Governor Jerry Brown, among other changes. It would raise the retirement age of most new state workers to 67. The analyst's office called the proposal a bold first step, but said further action would be needed. A former Crenshaw High School football star was sentenced today to life in prison for murder. 23-year-old Taquan Knox is convicted of the 2007 shooting death of Pamela Lark. Lark's daughter was set to testify against Knox in a robbery case. Military personnel leaving active duty are facing hurdles not covered in any handbook. How to find a job in the Great Recession. To help them, California's Department of Veteran Affairs, or CalVet, and the state's communities colleges agreed to make it easier to get into the classroom. Jack Scott is chancellor of California Community College.
We're looking forward to extend the conversation to what we can do in the classroom on behalf of our 45,000 veterans who are enrolled in the California Community Colleges.
The unemployment rates for California's veterans from the ages of 20 to 34 years old ranges between 20 and 25%. Keep on clicking on our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle is Annenberg Radio, and we'd love to hear from you. Now we check in with Madeline Segura to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Today on ATVN, we have the latest news on Herman Cain's alleged sexual harassment scandal. Tune in to hear what Cain says he's willing to do to prove his innocence. We also have the latest on the Penn State child sex abuse scandal, and we have reaction from students. Also, nurses are rallying together to gain public support for better patient care and better worker contracts at Beverly Hospital. We spoke with one rallier to see what exactly they're demanding. And don't forget, tune in tonight for the latest developments in the NBA lockout. It looks like the players have until Wednesday to make a deal. Remember, you can watch Annenberg TV News tonight at 6 p.m. or on the web at atvn.org.
Well, that's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Annenberg TV News, Smitha Bondotti, Alex Norwick, and Solomon Fuentes. Emily Frost is our producer, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Tiffany Brannon.
We'll be right back.